What's up, After the Tones Drop family? Dropping in real quick with an exciting update from your favorite podcast. We're wrapping up the first season in the first week of May. I can't even believe it. It is crazy wild how fast this has gone. While we take a short month-long break to gear up for season two, we've got something special lined up for you. We're rolling out four fantastic bonus episodes featuring some of our favorite voices from our past guests. First up, we'll have Jason Warne, the mindfulness medic, who will help soothe your spirit. Then, Kenny Mitchell will take us behind the scenes with Operation Yellow Tape. William Young from Just Corrections will share his insights on the system. And Jess Flores will be gearing up to take us into the next shift with her podcast. Each of these incredible advocates brings a unique perspective to the world of first responder mental health. Stay tuned and keep those vibes positive, and let's keep learning and growing together. Thanks for being such an awesome part of this journey. We'll catch you soon with those bonus episodes.
We know that there is a high number of individuals with ADHD that overlap and are first responders. If I were to have the power to rename or relabel attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, to me, it's a no-brainer. It would be executive dysfunction disorder.
The topic today is something that you and I can really relate to, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I feel like this is coming up a lot, that we talk about struggling with boundaries. We understand. We talk about childhood trauma. We understand. We talk about addiction. We understand. And now let's throw ADHD on the pile and say, indeed, we understand.
We totally understand. And those that we are married to may not.
It's like, I can't help it. My mama made me like this.
When we're talking about executive functions, there are five core skills. As I read them, you're probably going to think of ways that this manifests for you.
It's the first responder, the first to get the call, the first on scene, greeted by God knows what, pushed beyond the limits that they don't even set. Then what happens? You're listening to After the Tones Drop. We're your hosts. I'm Cinnamon, a first responder trauma therapist.
And I'm Erin. I'm a first responder integration coach.
Our show brings you stories from real first responders, the tools they've learned, the changes they've made, and the lives they now get to live.
Well, Cinnamon, today is our day to shine and talk about us. Just kidding. Actually, not just kidding. In a lot of ways, it really is, because the topic today is something that you and I can really relate to, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I feel like this is coming up a lot, that we talk about struggling with boundaries. We understand. We talk about childhood trauma. We understand. We talk about addiction. We understand. And now let's throw ADHD on the pile and say, indeed, we understand.
We totally understand. And those that we are married to may not. They just see how annoying we are and many things that we do.
God bless them.
I know.
It's like, I can't help it. My mama made me like this.
They really should get more credit and get less criticism for not always understanding. But for a lot of our listeners, we know that there is a high number of individuals with ADHD that overlap and are first responders. And it can get even trickier when you're constantly experiencing traumatic exposure, whether it's cumulative or acute. Some of the symptoms of PTS are going to look a lot like the symptoms of ADHD. So we wanted to spend this time talking about ADHD, talking about all the ways that it shows up in our lives for those of us who experience it, and how it can cross over into the PTS world, and why it makes a difference to know whether those symptoms that you're having are originating out of post-traumatic stress or ADHD.
Absolutely. And the other thing is to preface that you're very passionate about the fact that attention deficit hyperactive disorder is a super shitty name for this particular...
Super shitty name.
Yeah. And I do want to touch on, too, if you go back in time, I don't know, maybe in September, we did release an episode 23 called Thriving in the Wild with the Hunting Public's very own Zach Farinbaugh. And his whole episode was about his experiences with ADHD and how it affected his home and work life and how he did eventually end up finding his superpowers within that diagnosis. So that's super cool. If you want to go back and be tantalized by Zach,
listen to my baby boy.
Yeah.
That's a grown-ass man. So the interesting thing about that and why I loved Zach's episode, other than it was fun to spend time with him and do that, was part of why he struggled so much at the beginning was not only did he not know he had ADHD, but he didn't even know that some of the problems that he was having were manifestations of ADHD, which is why we go back to my opinion that ADHD or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is a shitty, shitty name for it. And I tell my clients all the time that ADHD is clearly a name that was given to the disorder by people who do not have it, but are annoyed by us, because it's focusing on the two components that tend to impact others that we interact with the most. So if I have an attention deficit and I am not paying attention, or I can't continuously maintain my attention on you, then people are perceiving it as an attention deficit. And it's like, hello, hello, squirrel, are you listening? Mm-hmm. And then the other part is the hyperactivity. And I know for me as a kid, I really struggled with social relationships and I never could figure out why. And I would try to shift who I was or how I presented so I would be accepted, not recognizing that it was simply my hyperactivity and there was no way I was going to get away from that characteristic. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about attention deficit hyperactivity, my first rule of thumb is I do not have an attention deficit. And I know for a fact, neither do you, Erin. Because
no, I'm quite the opposite.
Yeah. So what is actually happening is not so much that we have a deficiency, it's that we have a regulation problem. Mm-hmm. Because I can start doing something and not look up for 7 hours and not even realize that I have been hyper focused. And I'm sure that there are a lot of our listeners who might be able to relate to that in terms of watching ESPN, playing video games. I love a good rabbit hole on the interwebs. You know, we know that we have the capacity to get hyper-focused. So that kind of voids out the idea that we have an attention deficit.
Yeah.
We have an attention dysregulation issue. Because let's be honest, I don't like
boring shit.
I don't like boring shit. So if I have something to do that is more fun than what you're asking me to do, then I'm going to have a very difficult time transitioning. So an example of that is when I was little, it was a Saturday morning thing that we would all clean our house, or we would clean my grandma's house, depending on what week it was. And being the youngest sibling of three daughters, I frequently found ways to get myself free from having to do chores. If you pretend you don't know how to vacuum long enough, people are going to quit bothering you to try to get you to vacuum. So my whole childhood, my mom would call me lazy. And I'm like, I'm not lazy. I'm just not stupid. Like, how are you thinking that I'm going to want to dust, vacuum, and all of that? I feel bad for you all because you didn't come up with a good enough reason to get out of it. So it wasn't that I was lazy. Give me something fun to do and I'm all about it, right? So the idea of being both hyperactive and lazy was ironic, because now let's get into that hyperactivity piece. Yeah, there is some hyperactivity that goes with it, but it doesn't mean that we're bouncing off the walls all the time. I think it's really important for those of us that have it. Oftentimes we don't do a lot of research. We don't learn about our disorder. We find out we have it. And then we take meds, and that's about the end of it. So when we start having other problems, we don't always know that those issues or those problem behaviors are also manifestations of ADHD. So if I were to have the power and the honor to rename or relabel attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, to me, it's a no-brainer. It would be executive dysfunction disorder, because that is actually what is happening. The executive functions that are ruled in our prefrontal cortex that basically guide our adulting, they don't work the way that other people's work.
Yeah.
That, I think, would lead to way less shame, way less guilt tripping, way less struggle with social interactions if we weren't just told, here are the two most annoying things about you, but rather, this is why you struggle to do the things that seem to be easy and normal for other people.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you that are listening and have been told one too many times, why don't you just try a planner? Yeah, because those don't...
I have 12.
because I have and they don't work. And I feel like there's so many times that people are like, well, why don't you just?
Mm-hmm.
And because ADHD is a neurobiological disorder and it falls more so into the category with like autism, when we experience someone with autism, we, in a general way, know that we have to make adaptations because there are just some things that it doesn't matter how many times you explain it, they're just not going to do. So if people thought more about ADHD in that same disorder family as autism, all it is that our brains simply work differently mm-hmm. than the standard operating procedure. It's not that we're wrong. It's just that we're different. It's not something that we can just stop doing or start doing. I would love to be on time.
I will say that we're doing better, but we are definitely by the skin of our teeth. I wanted to share something that was comical that I experienced earlier this morning and how my brain works and give an example of something that our listener may relate to if they struggle with this. I go upstairs to get my cup of coffee. I open the fridge. I grab the creamer. I go to put it in my coffee. I go to put the half and half back and realize that the shelf is disgusting. There's like milk. I don't know what was all over the shelf.
Oh, yeah.
So then what? Next thing I know, I'm pulling everything off of the shelf and I am now cleaning the shelf. Then I'm like, if I don't do this now, then this is going to drive me nuts. I'm going to think about it all afternoon. So I'm just going to go ahead and do this now. This is not what I was intending on doing. And I put everything back in the shelf. And then I'm like, well, if I'm going to do that shelf, I'm like, I should just wipe off the one below it because, and it is that kind of thing that people will be like, why can you not focus? Or why can I not count on you? Or you said that.
Why can't you stay on task?
Right. And one, for me, it's like, if I don't do this right now, another opportunity will come with something else for me to do and it will not happen. And two, I can't help it. It will drive me nuts. Like once I see it and it's in front of my face, I will be thinking about a milk-covered fridge shelf for the next hour until I just go do it. It's annoying. I get it. And it's even more...
It's annoying to you too, right?
That's what I'm saying. It's even more annoying to me. Like I had much better shit to do than clean milk off of a fridge shelf. But I digress. Here we are. And it is what it is.
What I heard you describe in a little bit of that was... the hyper-focus, that if you don't do it, you're not going to be able to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that you said about if I don't do it now, I am one of those people that I need everything out on the counter.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I can't see it, it doesn't exist. If I don't do it right now, I will forget it needs done. If I don't write it down somewhere, and maybe if I don't write it down in 54 places, it will not pop into my brain for another 3 months. So part of that is it is really difficult to have a shitty memory. It is one of the hardest struggles as an adult that I have is that my brain is like Swiss cheese and nothing sticks. If I don't put my vitamins out on the counter, I don't take them. As much as we may annoy other people, I think it's really important for the people who interact with us to understand nobody suffers worse than we do because we're with us 24/7 and we can't fix it.
Yep.
And we know that we're dropping balls and we want to be better and we're just not. Now, do I still get a lot of shit done? Yes. But sometimes I work on five projects simultaneously and it takes way longer to get them done because I will never start a project and finish it. I just won't.
No.
That gets boring and I need to go find something else to entertain me, even if it's another project.
Well, I think that I have the opposite thing, which is I will finish a project that I start, but it might not be the appropriate project for the time frame that I have allotted, right? So one thing I will say is that it's gotten to the point in my family, especially with my brother and my dad, where we joke about, like, we call it OCD, but I'm very clear that it's a symptom of the ADHD, where we are going to crush any project that we have our mindset on. It's going to be done with master precision, and we're going to have it all like freaking organized and drawn out and ready to go, and it's going to be awesome. But the problem is that we agonize over it, and that's the tricky part, and that's what makes it so hard, is we agonize over it. And I know that my husband specifically, it drives him nuts, almost to the point where, oh, well, I know this is just how you are. And so if you have your eye set on some kind of end game, that I'm going to lose you for 3 days. And for me, that feels super hurtful. I'm like,
okay,
thanks.
You just opened up the gate, and there's a kind of an order that I talk about these in, but we can go out of order simply because you just brought it up. When we talk about executive dysfunction and the ways that our brain works differently, so things don't operate similarly to those that are neurotypical, one of the executive functions is cognitive flexibility. What is cognitive flexibility, you may ask?
Yes.
It's the ability to transition between activities, and it's the ability to shift when something doesn't go according to plan. You know who I thought of when I was like getting ready for this episode, thinking about examples of cognitive flexibility?
My husband.
Lila.
Oh.
Do you remember when we were at Great Wolf Lodge and she had this expectation of how we were going on a wizardry, magical wolfy trek, whatever. What is that thing called?
It's called Magic Quest.
Magic Quest. Mm. And she had a booklet, and there in the booklet were the directions of how it was supposed to go. And when we got to that one spot, that thing was not there, and we damn near had a complete meltdown.
Yep.
And it's that idea of being inflexible to cognitive changes when things don't go according to plan. It feels more like turning the Titanic around, and it's going to be a struggle. Now, whether or not Lila has ADHD, that's not what I'm talking about. I just am giving an example that makes sense to what cognitive flexibility is. And I know for me, when I was younger, if I asked you to do something or made plans and you said no, or canceled on me, I would take it so personally. And now I'm like, okay, no worries, because I've worked on that particular executive function.
Yeah.
And it's not as much of a problem because ultimately, yeah, I might be bitchy with you, but I'm emotionally suffering when I'm cognitively
That's
inflexible.
Right. Yeah. And I would definitely say that I don't think that my daughter has ADHD, but I am watching my son.
No.
I think for my daughter, it's more about being a child and learning how to shift gears, and that not everything goes according to plan. And that's just the way the cookie crumbles.
Yeah.
We talked about this executive functioning. You started leaning into that in terms of the flexibility or inflexibility. What are some other things that are affected, and what does that look like?
When we're talking about executive functions, there are 5 core skills. As I read them, you're probably going to think of ways that this manifests for you. I also, side note, when you were talking about the shelf in the refrigerator, all that popped into my head was, if you give a mouse a cookie, the book,
yeah,
this is what happens. So again, sidebar squirrel. So the first of the executive functions is focus and attention. Right up out of the gate, we're talking about the difficulty with our ability to stay focused on something or to unfocus ourselves for other prioritized items. So it's the dysfunction of the regulation part of it, right? So it can be extreme on either end, but it's the inability to regulate it. And it's not just I can make a decision or somebody can give me a directive and I do it. My brain has different plans. So again, that can look like we don't finish a project to the end, which is why my office is still not cleaned out and organized and my dining room is still under remodeling. But it's also the difficulty remembering what we were about to do. How many of us have went into a room and stood there and thought, why did I come in here? And Erin, what do you do when that happens? What is a common behavior that you have figured out to use to help you?
To help me remember?
Mm-hmm.
When that happens to me, most of the time, I actually just stand there and talk to myself. I'm like, okay, so I came in here. I usually like backtrack. I try to rewind the tape.
Yes.
And see where I was when I started this thought process. And then so I reverse engineer it.
Exactly.
And talk to myself.
I walk back to the room that I was in. And then it helps me remember. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that. And then I can go finish it.
Yeah.
So how, for normies or neurotypical people out there, can you imagine how difficult it would be and how time consuming it is to have to constantly backtrack because your brain cannot retain that information?
So this is a great example of, okay, I need to go into such and such room to grab this. In that exact millisecond of that thought, seven more thoughts will pop in.
Oh, yeah.
It's already interrupted. So then there's like 20 other things that are coming in, like do this, 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 this. So by the time I get to the room to get the thing that I went to go get, I'm like freaking in Europe. It's over.
I want to talk specifically about what you just described, but in a different form in a minute. And
are you going to remember?
I was just like, I'm going to throw this out there. So I am not the only one with it in my brain. Some people call it dolphining. I like to call it moling, but we're going to come back to that. So the second executive function that we usually are dysfunctional with is planning and organizing. So being able to arrive on time with what we actually need in that moment, not the wrong paperwork or missing paperwork, the ability to keep home office organized. Like some of us like to close doors so people can't see the hellacious mess that we have. And it's not that I don't stress about it because I know I'm going to get to it. That does not mean that my extremely organized husband doesn't rub his face a lot and sigh, but this many years in, he has gotten a little bit better about it. But the idea that we can keep an environment clutter-free, part of what you may hear is, I know where everything is. And if I see it, it helps me remember. Because like I said before, if it's out of my line of sight, it has never existed before in all of mankind. It's just gone. The third that we already talked about is that cognitive flexibility. Our ability to transition between things that may vary in its excitement or stimulation, or a desirable task, as well as our ability to shift when plans change. Then emotional regulation.
What? Emotional regulation. What is that? I don't know how to do that.
So again, emotional dysregulation.
Yeah.
This is an executive dysfunctional disorder. Because this is one of those things that I think happens that when neurotypical folks look at us, it makes them perceive us as immature.
Mm-hmm. And then we're also emotionally, we also have anxious attachment style. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, because as we're gonna talk about RSD here in a minute, and that would give us more of an anxious and secure attachment style as well. So with the emotional regulation, the goal is to be able to put your emotions in context and keep it reasonable, regulated, being able to be the person in control of your emotions and your emotions not inciting a behavior that you don't feel like you were in charge of or that you made a decision to behave that way. It keeps us from having outbursts. It also can keep us from interrupting.
Mm-hmm.
Like you and I are both very well versed in our compulsion to interrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, ooh, 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 ooh. If I don't say this right now, I will forget it.
Yep.
And so it is that compelling need because we have that experience of knowing that if we don't say it right now, we're going to forget it. But then it's rude to constantly interrupt. And when I try to not interrupt, if I'm having a conversation with my husband or with you, and I'm like, no, go ahead. And they're like, okay, so what were you going to say? No idea.
Yep.
No idea.
It's gone.
It may come back in 5 minutes or 2 years. We'll see. And it also helps us from refraining from hurting other people's feelings because we're actually thoughtful about what we're saying before we say it. When somebody says, oh, I spoke without thinking, that's it.
Isn't that interesting? You would think it would be the opposite. You would think that we would just blurt out whatever because of that inability to retain and hold on to something that we wanted to say.
Yeah. And it's ironically, I think that's part of a lot of this disorder is that there's a lot of irony in the things that we can and can't do depending on what that particular situation is. But how many times have you said something and after it's been laid out of your mouth, you thought, oh my God, that was such an inappropriate thing to say. You don't think about that context of if you make a comment that's appropriate, but you forget your audience and you say something really offensive. And the last one, and I think this and emotion regulation are really deeply tied together, is impulse control. Again, key skill in effective adulting that we do not organically possess.
Mm-hmm. So that is where respecting boundaries and even as far as where addiction patterns may come into play, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Again, it would be very interesting to see some data on a correlation between those diagnosed with ADHD or have similar symptomatology and those who struggle with addiction to substances.
Yep.
Because what do substances do? They numb us.
That's right.
And it is very appealing sometimes to not have all of this intensity of why can't I do things like other adults do? Mm-hmm. And it's that constant thread of I'm not good enough, I should be better, all of that. So, man, after beating yourself up and getting beat up for decades, why wouldn't you find something that kind of numbed you out? That's what I did. I mean, I was lazy. I didn't have a lot of friends because I was so hyperactive. It was painful. It was, you know, my sisters didn't want me around because I was annoying. And it just feels so hurtful to not be able to understand why nobody wants you around.
Yeah.
And that pain, eventually, when you figure out how to numb it, you're going to have a real difficult time stopping because it's the only break that you've gotten from everybody just saying, do better. And you're like, if I could, I would.
Right.
I'm not doing this on purpose.
Yep. And so we've touched on a handful of these just in our examples and our stories. But if we can name some things that other folks might say are annoying with individuals that do have ADHD, what would some of those things look like that are common issues?
There are two that I think, well, three that I think are really important. So I want to start with those three. The first one is what we call time blindness. So time blindness. And it is the label that we put on the manifestation of issues with time management. So we may habitually underestimate the time required to complete a task. We may then think that we can do one or two more things before we leave the house. We have that time, and then we end up being late wherever we're going. We may have a difficult time struggling to prioritize our tasks effectively. I know that a lot of times time can pass by without me even knowing it. And so I may think I have enough time to do something and I don't. Like even today, I said, give me 10 minutes. I was done 20 minutes later. Like me not being able to accurately calculate how long something's going to take. That is a huge one that I think other people would find annoying. If they were interacting, like you don't, I'm sure you do find it annoying, but you are way more sensitive to it and tolerant of it because you do it too. The second one that I want to mention is rejection sensitivity dysphoria. So rejection sensitivity dysphoria. And that is when you experience severe emotional pain because you failed, disappointed others, or you perceive that you've been rejected.
Mm.
there is also that hypersensitivity. Because if I say, hey, Aaron, would you like to go get a mocktail after work today? And you said, oh, no, I can't. I already have plans. I am not going to be like, okay. I'm going to be like, does she really have plans? She probably just doesn't want to hang out with me. Well, nobody really wants to hang out with me. And now my feelings are hurt. And now I don't want to talk to Aaron again because now I think she doesn't like me. And I may, you know, call a friend or a therapist and cry about it because my feelings are hurt. Mm-hmm. And somebody has to interject and say, hey, is it possible that she would have loved to have gone to dinner with you, but she already had a commitment? And she is the kind of person that does not throw her children under the bus and will absolutely go pick them up after school in lieu of maybe a more stimulating event of having dinner with you.
Yeah.
No, she hates me.
I know it.
But yeah, I'm like, nice try, but I'm not falling for that. You're not going to make me think that you like me.
Right.
But you really hate me. So when you are interacting with people that are hypersensitive and have that sensitivity to rejection, it can feel like you're constantly consoling or comforting them or reinforcing like, no, that's not what that person was doing. Mm-hmm. Or no, that's not what I intended. The third most important thing from, I think, and again, being somebody with ADHD, this was really important for me to learn that this was even a thing. Because I don't know how many times I've gotten my hearing checked and I have said that I have a profound hearing loss, that I have to read lips, all of these things. But really what I have is auditory processing disorder. And oftentimes it will be people who think that they need to go get the hearing checked and they're fine. What it actually is your brain is not processing sounds and language the way it's supposed to. It can look like I'm not paying attention. I may have to go, what? Can you repeat yourself? Can you look at me when you're talking? Can you say that louder? Can you quit mumbling? Right. And it doesn't matter. My husband is a mumbler, but I'm the one who gets the because I've asked him to repeat it four times. Now, I could get mad and be like, can you quit fucking mumbling? Because it would help me stop having to ask you to repeat yourself. But because it's always been my problem, I am always the one that feels like I need to compensate. So when we get into noisy environments and we get overstimulated and we have to go, I personally have to have the subtitles on the TV.
I do too. I was just going to say that. My family makes fun of me.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I have to. Yeah.
And
yes,
I have people that I watch movies with say, it's so distracting. How do you watch the movie if you're reading? And I'm like, because I can't hear it. And it doesn't matter how high you turn the volume up, I'm not going to be able to hear it. And it's a comprehension.
Then it just sounds like a bunch of noise. It's just like, it's almost like your brain is kind of like in slow-mo, but everything else is moving and fast forward when it comes to trying to process that.
Yes.
That's how it feels for me.
Well, and a lot of times I have to repeat what you said. And when I'm repeating it, that is the time when I'm like downloading and comprehending. Mm-hmm. I cannot hear you and comprehend what you're saying simultaneously. It's a two-part process for me.
Which makes you a really good therapist because you're like, so what I'm hearing you say is...
what I think I've heard.
Right.
Reflective listening. And the interesting thing is it doesn't happen within therapy. It happens outside of therapy, but I'd shift into a different mode and I don't have that same problem. But I definitely say, okay, hang on. Let me just tell you what I think I just heard you say to make sure that I am understanding accurately. I'm just going to throw out a couple more, but the rest of the habits or manifestations of the disorder that people find annoying are our lack of organization. We're not very tidy.
Unless we want to be organized.
And then we're hyper-organized.
Right.
Yeah. And then get out of our way because we will color code our post-its. We're impatient. We do not have a lot of patience. We're easily frustrated, especially, hello, dusting and vacuuming child here, when they are perceived as boring and repetitive. However, today you will find me vacuuming my house 3 to 4 times a day. So sometimes people can change.
But now it's just obsessive.
Right? It's just another manifestation. It is because we have those dark hardwood floors and you can see every speck of anything on it. And I cannot live like that. So I'm constantly vacuuming.
Right.
Again, we have that emotional sensitivity, and that can go far beyond the confines of rejection sensitivity disorder. We also are procrastinators. We are the people that think we do our best work when we are running out of time. And what it is we're on the hot seat and we really can't afford to get those things done. And for me, like if I'm working on a training, I can start 2 months ahead, but I'm going to do most of the work in the last week because I will do it over and over and over and over again. I would hate to be an artist where I painted and I would have to decide when the painting was finished because I would just keep painting, slapping more shit on there. We are terrible with transitions, you know, transitioning between one activity or another. Sometimes it makes us disruptive. It makes us inefficient. You may see that with asking a kid, hey, get off your video games and come unload the dishwasher. You're going to yell.
Not a chance.
No, definitely not on the first time.
Yeah.
Because why would I stop this fun thing to do that boring thing? And that is not just a teenager being a teenager. It's an extra, right? It's like teenager on crack because it makes it so much harder than just what an average teenager would do.
Yeah.
And we have a low tolerance for boredom, which is oftentimes why we become entertaining.
If you're not going to entertain me, I will entertain myself. I cannot count on you.
I will do it, my damn.
God, we are funny. Me and you. No wonder we're so entertaining to each other.
I am funny. You are funny. We are funny together. Absolutely. Doesn't it make sense that we've got to bring the humor to the party so we will stay at the party? Right. So these are all of, I won't even say that. I won't say they're all the similarities, but they're definitely a lot. And if you are someone who has ADHD, I do hope this helps you understand yourself. If you are someone who loves someone with ADHD, I hope that even if you need to listen to this 14 times, you get some compassion and understand that we're not just trying to piss you off or be defiant. And Erin, do I have a time to mention some of the books that I would recommend people, or I do recommend?
Yeah, go ahead and talk about the books and don't forget about moling or dolphining or whatever.
See?
I know.
See? Okay, this is a fun one. I'm going to start with moling because the books are sitting right here. And I won't forget the books, but I might forget moling. So it can also be called dolphining. And so when you think about a mole or a dolphin, they'll like pop their head up above the surface, but we also know they go down and they burrow. Well, dolphins are swimming, but moles are burrowing. And then they might pop up another hole 15 feet away. So the reason we call it that is because we might be having a conversation and I may go silent. And then a couple seconds later, I might say something completely unrelated. And you look at me like I'm crazy and think, how did you get there? And I'm like, do you really want to know? Because I can take you back, but then you're going to see how my brain works and you might be scared. So if you and I are talking about the fact that we want to go visit Wyoming, give me 15 seconds and I will start talking to you about Little House on the Prairie. And you will say, how does going to a conference or traveling to meet first responders in Wyoming make you think of Laura and Pa and Ma and Carrie and Mary and the whole gang, Mr. Edwards? It's because when I think of Wyoming, I think of that region of the United States. And when I think of that region of the United States, that also can include Minnesota and Missouri and Oklahoma. And when I think of those states, I think about the fact that those were all places where Laura Ingalls Wilder lived that came up in her storybooks. And then I start thinking about the fact that each of those locations has a Laura Ingalls Wilder museum that you can go visit. And so when we're talking about going to conferences and all of a sudden out of nowhere, after a few seconds being quiet, I say, can we go to Laura Ingalls Wilder Museum? And you're like, what in the actual?
Yeah. What are you even talking about?
What are you? Because we started about conferences in Wyoming. Well, my head was above ground And then I went mulling. And then I popped my head back up again after being done thinking. And I am talking about visiting a Laura Ingalls Wilder museum in Minnesota.
I laugh because I'm like, yeah, isn't that what everybody does? Apparently not.
Apparently not. So even when we recognize that we have some neuroatypical behaviors, we don't necessarily know what they are because we don't, this is the only brain we've ever had.
It's normal to us. Yeah.
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 It may be atypical, but it is our normal.
So what are these books then, Sin, that we must know about?
Dear God. Thank you. I would have forgot.
See, I'm thank God we have each other, one whole brain.
So the first book that I want to share, and again, we'll make sure that all of these are in the show notes or in the links on our resource pages. But the first book I want to talk about is one that I have probably bought 4 times now because I keep giving it away. And it is called Life-Changing Strategies to Improve Executive Functioning, Brain Hacks. The subtitle is Work Smarter, Stay Focused, and Achieve Your Goals. And this is a book by Laura Honus Webb, PhD. And it really does help us understand what is happening in our brains as we operate within the context of having ADHD and ways that we can make life a little easier for ourselves. I think this is one of those good books that can be both for an individual with ADHD as well as like a parent who can be coaching their kids to use some of these brain hacks to make their lives a little bit easier. The next one I wanted to mention is a book that I got because when Ed and I got together, there were so many challenges that he just did not understand and I didn't have the language to explain. And so I found this book and it has actually been really helpful. And it's called ADHD and Us, A Couple's Guide to Loving and Living with Adult ADHD. And it is by Anita Robertson, LCSW. And I would recommend this to any couple where one of them has ADHD. I have a workbook that is a companion to Attention Deficit Disorder in Adults, the 4th edition. And this is Attention Deficit Disorder in Adults Workbook. And it is by Lynn Weiss, PhD. And she is actually a best-selling author of ADD on the Job. And it literally helps us write down on paper and think through some of those behaviors and ways to solve them. And the last that I have, it actually is a therapist guide, but I don't care because I think that we're all adults and we can help ourselves navigate through some things and it's educational. It's called Mastering Your Adult ADHD, a Cognitive Behavioral Treatment Program. And it is by Stephen A. Safran, Susan E. Spritch, Carol A. Perlman, and Michael W. Otto. And it is basically using cognitive behavioral therapy to walk ourselves through modifying some of those behaviors. So we will make sure we have those in the show notes and we'll get them up on the resource pages of Whole House and After the Tones Drop. And if this has been educational or enlightening for you, please join us for the episode where we start talking about how ADHD and PTSD can collide and overlap and cause more challenges in our lives and in our relationships and can make it harder to properly treat and recover from PTS as well as treat
ADHD. Yeah.
ADHD.
It'll be a good one.
Or as we should moving forward, know it as executive dysfunctioning disorder. Thank you.
Who do we have to write to change that?
Shit.
This is my TED Talk. That's why you're like, right. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
I'm going to say it's probably the American Psychological Association, but now ask me how quickly they will get to your letter.
No, they won't care.
They don't care.
They'll move it. They don't care. All right, so we'll see you next week.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of After the Tones Drop. Today's show has been brought to you by Whole House Counseling. As a note, After the Tones Drop is for informational purposes only and does not constitute for medical or psychological advice.
It is not a substitute for professional healthcare advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please contact a local mental health professional in your area if you are in need of any assistance. You can also visit afterthetonesdrop.com and click on our resources tab for an abundance of helpful information. And we would like to give a very special thank you and shout out to Venz Adams, Yeti, and Sonda for our show's music.